Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to another thrill-packed and exciting episode of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029 and he can help you find the life insurance you need. This is Brian Myers, and Shane Vanderhart is out of pocket today, unfortunately, because I have the death of pneumonia practically. Anyway, today we have Steve Reicher at co-host. And welcome, Steve.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
I think it's fair to say that I'll be relying on you a lot today.
In case you get confused during the course of this broadcast, I am the one who does not sound like they're dying.
Oh, man. I had a great week. I was in New England. I got to see my son-in-law and daughter and grandkids, and I was able to get some work done out there. We got some customers out there, so that was awesome. But along the way, I captured some sort of death virus.
Ebola is back. I just wanted to warn you.
Stop. Okay, Steve, why don't you go ahead and introduce the guest that we have on our VIP line before I die right here on the air.
Absolutely. We're going to talk to Emmett McGroarty. He's the Director of Education over at American Principles in Action. And Emmett, are you there with us?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Emmett. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Morning, Emmett.
Hey, Emmett, in case people are wondering why we've got you on, your group, the American Principles in Action, just released a press release talking about the No Child Left Behind reauthorization that's in front of Congress. What can you tell us about that and kind of fill us in on the background here?
Okay, well, this is what's going on. The federal government is engaged in a huge takeover of education.
Wait, and you're kidding. And the federal government is overstepping their bounds?
I know.
We're going to find that hard to believe here at Caffeinated Thoughts.
Who knew?
But really, they want to transform education into sort of a workforce development enterprise. They want to link it up with the Labor Department and really want to take another leap forward in terms of managing our lives. When you look at what they've done, they've made huge strides forward in terms of dictating to the states what their standards will be, how they'll evaluate teachers, what amounts of data they collect on students and teachers and families, what it is that children will be learning in the classroom. So all of that is kind of tied up in this No Child Left Behind reauthorization, which is now being called the Student Success Act. So that's what we're, in a nutshell, that's what we're trying to fight.
So you came out against this, and you said this is a bad idea, and I think most of our listeners anyway would agree with you. We would prefer that the federal government take a smaller role in education across America. What are you advocating?
That might be an understatement. Just saying.
What are you advocating instead of this?
Well, what we would like to do is, I mean, if Congress is intent on putting a law forward, and we've got to put some sort of law forward, right? I mean, No Child Left Behind is due for reauthorization, so we have to decide, well, do we want to change the existing law?
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost everybody would agree, well, it needs to be changed. The question is, what direction are we going in? And so what Congress has done is it sort of said, well, we'll give the states more freedom and flexibility. They've made some changes, but really when you look at those closely, the changes they've made are pretty insignificant in terms of giving the states more freedom. I should say returning the freedom that's due to the states and the people to them. And what they've done also is lay the groundwork for further federal intrusion. So,
How have they done that?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, and this will probably be a surprise. It's a surprise to most people. But every state has to submit a comprehensive plan to the federal government as to what their comprehensive education plan to the federal government. And now, with this reauthorization, the reauthorization bill would actually give the federal government more tools to reject the plan.
And is this done primarily through the power of the purse? Is that what they're is that how they gain conformity from the individual states?
Yes, it's through the power of the purse, and then there's sort of an added step of this is why the system breaks down. What happens is that the state executives get into essentially a conversation with the federal executives. They cut the legislature out of the conversation, and so the federal government starts saying to state executives, okay, this is what we'll be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And the state executives, they've really grown addicted to the money.
Right.
And doesn't matter really who the president is, they tend to go along with it. And they tend to say, well, okay, we'll make those changes. And then that's confusing to the people in the legislature. They think these changes and these initiatives are coming from their State Department of Education. That is, that they're State Department of Education sat down and looked at these things and said, these are great ideas. These are our ideas. We want to move forward with it. In reality, what's happening is it's the state executive trying to genuflect to the federal government so that they can get as much money as possible from the federal government.
Emmett, do these plans that are submitted by the states to the federal government, are these plans highly detailed or are they more conceptual?
No, they are detailed and then it goes down further. The local education agencies submit plans to the states, and so it gets quite detailed and quite down to really being school specific when the whole process is said and done.
Now,
there's kind of a pyramid of reporting. And these aren't anything new, by the way, but I think it's good to shed light on it, that this is how the system is operating, and to try to get it changed. So if we're going to put a new bill through, Congress should really start addressing and focusing on those state plans. And there's other, I mean, Congress, the bill has made attempts to try to push back against the federal government. I think they're just ill-considered attempts. So, for instance, the bill has one point where it says it's going to protect state sovereignty and parental rights. So there's language in there about that. And then it says, well, you know, unless your state legislature has forfeited those or has agreed to give up those rights.
Emmett, I just want to remind people that they're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and this is brought to you today by Travis Risfold of Modern Woodmen of America, and you can call Travis at 515-883-0029 to help you find the insurance that you need. Now, Emmett, you were talking about one of my favorite things. One of my favorite authors is George Orwell, who is always famous for talking about doublespeak and government. And one of the things I love about this is called the Student Success Act. What we're talking about here, it's a 600-page behemoth of a bill,
Nowadays 600 pages is actually a small bill.
Is that crazy or what? The government's always very good at naming these bills something that would seem impossible to vote against. You know, how would you not want to vote for a Student Success Act? But this is 600 pages of federal government imposing upon state government. Now, anyone who's studied any amount of American history knows that there must be a balance of power between the federal government and the state's government. from an education standpoint, how can, what would you say about that? Where is that balance of power today as compared to where it might have been historically?
Yeah, I mean, really, there should be a division of power, but there is a balance of power now, and it's heavily weighted toward the federal government. And, you know, I think that did these legislators who crafted this bill, did they try to fix things? They did try to fix some things. I mean, they've added prohibitions in there to rein in the federal government. Now, there's a couple problems with that. There were plenty of prohibitions in the law already that spelled out what the federal government could not do. The problem is that they've been violated. And that gets to these prohibitions that Congress is fond of putting in there. Prohibition is no good if there's no enforcement mechanism. None of these prohibitions have an enforcement mechanism.
So what you're saying to me is that the federal government is not a particularly good choice to rein in the federal government?
Yes.
Is that at the heart of what we're getting at here?
Go figure.
The federal executive is so vast now that Congress is even ill-equipped to keep tabs on what's going on in the federal executive.
Boy, for some reason, this makes me think of the FTC. I don't know. We're going to have to get to that later on in the show. What you're talking to me about and what I'm hearing from you sounds remarkably similar to what people have been talking about regarding Common Core. Now, in your work and in what you do, you must come across Common Core. Are your opinions about Common Core the same as what you've said earlier?
Yes. I mean, Common Core is a low quality set of standards that does tremendous damage to children because it locks them in an inferior education. That is, if you follow the Common Core, it is very difficult for a child to be prepared for 4-year colleges to study the humanities, and it's especially difficult for them to be prepared for study in the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math.
And is Common Core, is that designed by educators?
Yeah, Common Core is owned and was financed by private entities. And it was primarily designed, I think, by a subset of educators. What was left out were high school English and math teachers and university professors of mathematics and literature. You know, some of the people that you would most want in there, they were pretty much left out of the picture. And then to make it worse, Common Core was drafted by private entities in behind closed doors, and with the idea that the Common Core would be in a monopoly.
Right.
So what did you have? You had none of the safeguards of either a market process, capitalist process, whereby you're competing against other people because the idea was a monopoly, and you had none of the safeguards of a public process.
So
because it was done behind closed doors by private entity, you can't do a FOIA Freedom of Information request on the process for the development of the Common Core.
So real quick before we have to let you go, I know that one of the other major concerns with both of these pieces of legislation is the amount of data that's being collected on our children and where that data is going and how it'll be used. Can you talk about that? Just give me 60 seconds on that.
Okay. Realistically, there is the major law, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, was drafted in the early 70s. It's way outdated. It doesn't account for high-speed computers, the Internet, any of that stuff.
Right.
To make matters worse, the Obama administration gutted that statute by changing the regulations to change it from a data protection statute to a data sharing statute. And now the data, student level data, can pretty much be freely shared with other government agencies, federal and state, and with private entities, even with entities outside of the jurisdictional boundaries of the United States. So our view is that needs to be, any piece of education legislation that is going through needs to, first of all, address those two things.
Amen.
But sort of the opposite is happening. This H.R. 5 really gives the federal government claim for a need to collect more data. And then there's another data bill that Senator Alexander is trying to push through that speaks to the collection of more data, including social and emotional data.
Perfect.
So these are highly dangerous, and the people are the last check and balance of our constitutional system. Everything else has failed.
I agree. Emmett, thank you very much for all of your time and
thank
expertise.
You, Emmett.
Emmett, where can people go to get more information about this and about your views?
You can go to AmericanPrinciplesProject.org, or there's another website that we started, FightTheCommonCore.com.
Excellent. Thank you for being here with us. I want people to stay tuned because coming up, we're going to have an interview with Caffeinated Thoughts head honcho, Shane Vanderhart, who's down at CPAC. Thank you, Emmett. We appreciate it very much. This has been Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I'm your host, Steve Riker, with
Brian Myers, who could barely speak.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7 A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. My name is Steve Riker, and I'm sitting in for the world-famous Shane Vanderhart. And my co-host today, Red Green, is that correct?
I think it probably is. Keep your sticks on the ice.
Well, as Brian Myers is letting his throat marinate over there, I'm going to talk to Shane Vanderhart a little bit. Shane is down at CPAC and bringing us a live report. Shane, are you with us?
Hey, yeah, I'm with you. I'm right now with Donald Trump actually speaking. So, heard him before. I can't imagine his speech to be a little bit different, but I'm sure I'll probably miss some, you know, fantastic one-liner or something that's going to be all over social media.
Right, right. Okay. Well, so Shane, you've got all the conservative leaders in America kind of gathered in one area. What are you hearing down there? What's really stuck out to you?
Well, one thing that's really kind of stuck out is, so far who I've heard from here that has spoken in Iowa, one thing is good. It's been consistent. So I'm glad to hear that they're not saying one thing in Iowa and saying something completely different in CPAC. The new chairman of the American Conservatives Union, however, he today, when he was speaking, said, I think our nominee will be a speaker here, or a speaker that came here. And one thing that should be interesting to note is Mike Huckabee is not here. He chose to do some stops in South Carolina and Tennessee in lieu of coming to CPAC. So I thought that was pretty interesting comment, right?
That is very interesting. Yeah, I thought Huck was really gearing up. It seemed like he was here in Iowa anyway.
Right, right. So I'm kind of actually surprised he missed. You know, he did miss out because he is usually well received here. Kind of the biggest news yesterday was actually the weather. They got about 3 to 4 inches in the D.C. metro area. Maryland a little bit heavier, at least the southern part of Maryland. So basically, Ben Carson was the very first speaker, and oh, what a horrible slot to have. The room was fairly empty at that point because a lot of folks coming in were, you know, running behind and, flights delayed and all that. So
yeah, Ben Carson's not used to speaking to an empty room either.
No, well, you know, not empty, but you know, compared to the capacity of the room, it seemed, you know, there was a lot of seats empty. So, which is unusual because the last time we spoke at CPAC last year when I was here, the room was pretty well filled. So, pretty unusual. I'm sure it was disappointing.
And Rick Perry spoke this morning. Was that one of the keynotes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
He spoke this morning. Marco Rubio spoke this morning. And let's see.
Rand Paul, did you get to listen to his speech?
Rand Paul's running behind so far, so he hasn't hit the stage yet.
Okay.
He was supposed to speak earlier this morning, but he hasn't done so.
Now, has the message been pretty consistent across most of the candidates or the speakers, or do you feel like there's a real diverse crowd down there?
It's been fairly consistent. One thing I've noticed, it'd be everybody's hitting ISIS hard. Everybody's really dinging President Obama on his foreign policy. Both Carly Fiorina and John Bolton both just ravaged her on her records. Especially John Bolton was particularly it was damaging just to go running through her background and her record as Secretary of State. Just the miserable failures that she has oversaw as Secretary of State. How our relations with our allies have been strained, but yet, you know, they've been would not really put our enemies on notice either, which is, you know, not a great combination for a Secretary of State. So making a good, compelling case why she would not be a good commander-in-chief.
Shane, has anybody down there really stole the show with their speech so far?
Well, Ted Cruz, he's a crowd pleaser, and he was getting a great response from the audience the whole time. Rand Paul, his room right now is packed. I was sure mostly in anticipation of him. You know, there's probably a lot of people here to hear Donald Trump too. But there's been different folks that have received some good response through aspects of the speech. Ted Cruz is probably the one who constantly got the plot lines throughout, but he's, again, that's not unusual. Carly Fiorina had, I mean, her greatest response, I wrote about on Caffeinated Thoughts this morning, was when she spoke on Islamic terrorism and basically Obama's foreign policy failures, saying, I know Benjamin Netanyahu, I know King Abdullah, and we need to listen to those folks. They're leading on this issue. The United States is not, and that's not the position that we want to be in. Marco Rubio today also, he made a great case, and I think this is one of his strong suits when he speaks on American exceptionalism, because his story is just so compelling, with his parents immigrating from the United States from Cuba.
Sure.
Just saying that, we're a great nation, but we're in decline. But, he said we're only one election away from, next American century. I hope he's right. Sometimes I have my doubts. But, people were attentive to him. And then he also he backpedaled his earlier support of that 2013 immigration bipartisan plan that, he really got dinged over, saying that, in light of what's going on now, he now admits it's completely unworkable. So that was interesting, and I think a big moment, and maybe would help, if he decides to run for president, it would help smooth things over with some of the conservative base in Iowa that really been disappointed by his support of that plan.
Shane, you talk about the conservative base, and I'm wondering, what is the what's the overall feeling down there about where the base is at? Do the conservative leaders down there feel like they have the full backing of this half of the American people, or are they concerned about the base being angry over some of the events of the last number of years?
Well, I think those who have spoken here have really tried to address that. Like, for instance, Bobby Jindal, he really dinged the GOP establishment for not fighting on executive amnesty, because the Senate right now, they put forward a bill, a clean DHS funding bill, so they wouldn't have to avoid a government shutdown. There are a lot of people upset about that. Basically, Governor Jindal, his words, throw a spine, which obviously appealed to the base here. So it seems like a lot of the people here that come here to speak are kind of tacking away from the establishment, trying to resonate with grassroots.
Interesting.
And share with them, hey, we're disappointed too, in what we're seeing as a failure of leadership with Republicans in Congress.
Hey, Shane, I just want to remind listeners that we were listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Brian Myers, and I'm Steve Riker, sitting in for you, Shane Vanderhart.
Not too often I'm interviewed here.
Because you are.
Let's ask him the tough questions.
You're off at ZBAC, right? Brian and I have been scheming about, all the tough questions we could ask you.
I can say no comment. That's above my pay grade.
Shane, I think the most heartening thing that I've heard you say is that they are tacking away from the establishment portion of the party, because Brian and I were talking about this earlier, that I've never seen this many lifelong Republicans being somewhat tenuous about their ties to that. In fact, our esteemed producer, Ron told us that he almost didn't vote in the last presidential election because he saw so little difference between the left and the right. And
right.
I hear people like Ron coming on my Facebook all the time saying very similar statements. And we need to make sure that the leadership at CPAC is seeing that this is a sentiment resonating throughout the country.
Right, and one thing I would caution our listeners too is that while we need to put a candidate's feet to the fire, we need to look for the most conservative candidate we can find. There's not going to be perfection. There's no such thing as a perfect candidate. But that's not to say we should settle for that. I've seen some people just tear apart. I think, in my mind, would be some quality candidates based off of one vote or one statement here or another statement there. It's like,
yep.
You know what?
Yeah,
there's
agree.
Not a person in the field that doesn't have some baggage.
That's true.
And we just need to decide what we can live with, you know, what's acceptable. And my thing is, we need somebody who's going to fight. I want somebody who's going to be a fighter in the White House, who's going to stand on conservative principles, and admit when they're wrong. So, you know, some things that have been compelling to me, I mean, Rubio's statement, and this is not an endorsement, I'm going to make that very clear, I'm not endorsing anybody, we're not even going to consider that until October, November, but Rubio's statement, I was wrong on immigration, and, you know, just to clap out, that, you know, that was like, wow. You don't hear that very often.
No, nobody ever does that.
Right.
Hey.
Right.
Hey, Shane, thinking of things that people are wrong about, we wanted to make sure...
And angry about.
We wanted to make sure and ask you your thoughts about the gas tax. As you know, that just got rammed through here in Iowa. And a lot of our listeners are concerned about that. What is your take on that from what you've seen?
Well, I thought it was interesting how quickly Governor Branstad signed it. Generally speaking, he usually sits on a bill for a little while before signing it. Even if it's one that's not controversial, I've just never seen him turn around and sign a bill that quickly.
So,
very interesting. Like most Iowans, I was very disappointed by the process. I was also disappointed with the seeming lack of willingness to look at other alternatives.
Right.
I don't think anybody denies that, you know, we're having a problem with upkeep of our roads and bridges. I think that everybody agrees on that. That's an issue.
Sure.
I think that's a legitimate function of government. You know, so I think that's something that, you know, if it should be a priority, it should be a priority in the general budget. But yet it seems like, you know, when you suggest that to the gas tax advocates, they would dismiss it for one reason or another.
Right. There was never a serious attempt to find another way to create this money or to carve out this money.
Right. And really what this does is it just raising the gas tax, all it does is kick the can down the road, because people are driving less. People are, you know, looking for other alternatives. You know, I joked on Facebook that I, out of protest, I'm going to buy a Prius. You know,
right.
I would never buy a Prius under any other circumstances. But I'm just...
I was going to remind you of that fact.
Yeah, you know, because I'm tired of how much gas costs. You know, just as a matter of good stewardship, and I think you're going to see more and more of that, which means our revenue out of from the gas tax is going to, you know, continually decrease, even if they raise the tax up, you know, by 10 cents. So I would not be shocked to see in a couple of years them coming back with their hat in their hand asking for more money.
That's it, exactly.
Government is never satiated with the amount of money that we give it.
Right. And also, too, this doesn't answer the fundamental problem about priorities and roads and, you know, these infrastructure projects. They need to look at the funding formula that goes into how, you know, counties get money to fix their roads. Some of like the Farm Bureau.
Less than a minute, Shane. Less than a minute.
Okay. Just basically, you know, I think all counties are going to end up being disappointed yet. They're going to still find those same roads not fixed.
Hey, Shane, thank you for spending some time with us, taking time away from your busy schedule. We will.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
We will continue to make a feeble attempt to hold down the fort here until you get back.
You're great.
And enjoy your trip. Have a safe trip back. We will be back on Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We're going to talk some more about the gas tax. We're going to talk about President Obama. He has not escaped our sharp eyes. And we'll be back soon.
Sharp eyes, huh? Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it.
He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7 A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I am your host, Steve Riker, sitting in for Shane Vanderhart. And my co-host with his newfound seductive lady's voice is Brian Myers.
Listen, if I'm doing the red-green today, does that mean you're Harold?
Well, I've got the duct tape. Does that count? Hey, our sponsor this week is Crosswalk Ministries. You can get a hold of Scott Owen, who's offering biblical counseling and conciliation at 515-292-7141, or log on to www.crosswalkcounseling.org. Now, I got to tell you, Brian, that conversation with Shane about the gas tax has got me fired up.
All it did is whet your appetite for more rant, right?
I'm telling you what, I want you to listen to me closely. If you are a lover of freedom and liberty in America, this was a bad week in politics.
It was indeed.
This gas tax, Shane talked about this, three hours it took Iowa legislators to pass this through the House and the Senate. Every single person that I've talked to who's followed politics for any amount of time, every one of them says they've never seen a bill go through the House and the Senate this fast.
Well, and everything about the process from start to finish was nasty, ugly, bad.
You know, Jan Michelson had this to say. He said the Iowa Republican base is boiling mad, dropping or switching their memberships. This is a multiple choice pop quiz. The reason is, A, they passed a tax. I hate taxes. I'm gone. B, they passed a tax after being shown a number of places to find money in the existing budget to fix stuff without raising taxes. C, they passed a tax after promising they wouldn't. Or D, they passed a tax by pushing the no voters out of their committees and in front of the bus. Or D, all of the above. I think Jan hit it right on the head.
Did you get a lot of all of the above in that Facebook
post? A lot of all of the above. Absolutely. This is the backroom machinations that went on there, the skullduggery. This is unprecedented, even for Branstad Republicans.
It was really, really bad. That whole business that, where committee members were punished for not supporting the tax.
Absolutely.
And in one case, if I understood the situation correctly, a committee membership was changed, altered in order to get it out of that committee.
That's right. That's right. You've never seen the Iowa Republicans change committee members in order to pass pro-life legislation or to cut taxes.
Right.
Tell me exactly, someone tell me what we gained by sending so many Republicans to the State House. I'm not seeing it, and I'm ticked off, and I'm telling you right now, there are thousands and tens of thousands of Iowans who are in the exact same boat, who are looking at this and questioning, is this what being a Republican is about? The Democrats, I understand, they've never met a tax increase they didn't like.
Well, interestingly enough, though, I did see on Facebook some Democrat voters were pretty ticked off about this.
Yep.
And I let them know this is not a partisan problem. You know, everybody there was all happy about passing a tax. This is not good.
You know, can I tell you a little story here? What scientists have found, and I actually did some research on this. It's very interesting. If you take a frog and you throw it into boiling water, you know what happens? That frog jumps right out. He skedaddles. He's gone. If you put a frog in a big pot and you start turning up the heat just a little at a time, just a little at a time, just a little at a time, you can actually boil a frog to death.
Right.
And Iowa taxpayers are just like that. You know, one of the things that ticked me off the most is that I heard all of these people saying, oh, well, it's just another X amount of dollars. It's just a few more dollars. And what's happening to the American taxpayer overall is that we are being incrementally taxed to death.
And regulated to death. Same, very similar kind of a situation.
Government poses a larger presence in the life of Americans right now than it ever has in the history of the United States.
And it grows day by day at every level of government.
Talking about government growing, apparently the FTC said to itself, they said, self, should we take over the internet and regulate it? And to no one's surprise, they came back and said, why, yes, self, we should.
Yeah, that's a question that never gets a no answer.
So the FTC has 332 pages of regulations. And do you know what was in those 332 pages? I'm going to answer that. You do not. American senators don't know what was in those regulations. This is another of Nancy Pelosi's famous...
Yeah, we got to pass the bill to see what's in it.
Unbelievable. But the FTC decided, oh, well, they need to protect us from the internet. someone said, and I'm misquoting this a little bit, but someone said that the Ferrari needed a tune-up. And so the FTC decided to strip it down to bare bones. And as you might have guessed, the GOP is in full retreat, waving the white flag. I think we have a fair amount of French influence now in the GOP. They seem to be better at retreating than they are at anything else. Now, one more retreat that's happened is Obama vetoing the Keystone Pipeline legislation. This is a case of a president bending over backwards to appease an interest group, the environmentalist interest group. But the problem is, and I know Brian that you are going to be shocked by this. The problem is that we have liberals using bad science to promote greater control over our lives.
Seriously?
I know, right?
That wouldn't happen, would it?
So We also have Warren Buffett, who is one of the largest Democratic donors in America, owns Burlington Northern. Now, Burlington Northern, in case you didn't know, makes an awful lot of money hauling oil along the same path as the Keystone Pipeline. This oil is costing $3 more per barrel to ship by rail than it would by pipeline. And if you want to talk about an environment, in 2013, there was more oil spilled from rail cars in the United States than in the previous four decades combined. How's that for environmental?
One of the questions that it begs is that may be the next fight for the environmentalists. They'll say, okay, we shut down the Keystone Project. Now, on the grounds of safety and environmental calamity, we got to shut down the rail shipments of this nasty crude oil out of Canada.
The biggest lesson that I want our listeners to take away today is that government is encroaching farther and farther into our lives. And we need to start looking at the big picture here and understanding that every time we cede ground, every time we allow them to raise taxes on this, or raise regulations on this, or to restrict this, we need to be looking at the overall movement of our country and saying, is this the direction that we want to go?
Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of folks out there that are quite happy with that direction. I don't understand it. I can't relate with it. But I think there's a lot of people that, for some reason, enjoy that direction.
Just I don't understand it, and I think that we are going to come to regret this in a number of years. This has been Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I'm your host, Steve Riker, filling in for Shane Vanderhart. Brian Myers is sitting right beside me, and we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes to wrap things up.
I'm sorry if what I said offended you, but you made me mad. Can we just forget this and move on? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Apologies are critical to conflict. They can either open the gate to a path of forgiveness or slam you into the ditch of bitterness. An apology like the one in our opener can cause damage because it does not request a change of relationship, but rather places the blame on the recipient and sidesteps the issue. There is no indication that the person really sees his own contribution to the problem, and no hope is given for change. A true apology communicates understanding, remorse, and a commitment to change. An excellent guideline is Peacemaker Ministries' 7 A's of an Apology. You can find the 7 A's at our website, crosswalkcounseling.org. Or to get coaching for your big apology, call us at 515-635-5465. That's 515-635-5465.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I'm Steve Reicher, sitting in for Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. Our sponsor is Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. You can call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. You know, Brian, thinking back over the things that we've talked about here, there's a quote that I think kind of sums up what I've been trying to say. And this is one of these famous apocryphal quotes that may or may not have been said by Thomas Jefferson, but we're going to give him
Did
credit.
Did you check it out on Snopes first?
The idea certainly resonates as Jeffersonian, even if the actual words weren't his. But he may or may not have said...
Maybe it was Brian Williams that made that quote back in the colonial period. What do you think?
That might have been. We'd have to ask him to know for sure. So either from Thomas Jefferson or Brian Williams, my reading of history convinces me that most bad government results from too much government.
Well, whoever said it, they're spot on.
Yeah, I think that this pretty much sums up the conversation that we had with Shane. It sums up the conversation about the FTC and Common Core and...
there's no end to it.
And what Emmett McGrody had to say to us. This is... We are reaching a tipping point in which this is too much. Anyway, take us on to something elsewhere.
Yeah. All right. And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
You can't make this stuff up. So authorities in Florida said that a couple and their puppy were rescued from a garbage truck after falling asleep in a trash bin. Panama City police said the garbage truck driver called authorities Tuesday morning when he heard calls for help coming from the back of his vehicle shortly after emptying the bin behind Catholic Charities in Panama City. The police report said that the driver was able to help a man, identified as Christopher McCormick, out the back of the truck, and Panama City Fire Department workers were able to free the woman, Jessica McCormick, after removing, quote, a large amount of trash. Police said it took about 20 minutes of sifting through the back of the truck to find the puppy. The McCormicks were taken to the hospital with minor injuries. The puppy was taken to an animal services facility to wait for its owners to be released.
But, you know, we were talking off the air. The amazing thing is nobody got hurt badly, including the puppy.
Are you saying this doesn't qualify for a Darwin Award?
No, I think you have to be deceased in order to qualify for the Darwin Award.
But our listeners' takeaway from this should be...
Maybe you shouldn't sleep in a garbage bin. This is maybe not a good idea. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, our quote of the day is this. You are either a Christian or you are not a Christian. You cannot be partly a Christian. You are either dead... or alive. You are either born or not born. Dr. Martin Lloyd Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, new life in Christ is really new life. You're either dead and corrupt as Lazarus in the tomb, or you've been called forth by the Savior, living again. There really is no in between.
I love these times that I spend here on Caffeinated Thoughts. I just wanted to thank you and Shane Vanderhart for letting me sit in one more time.
Well, thanks for coming on board, buddy. I'd have been in deep trouble without you. I would have croaked even worse.
This has been Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I'm your guest host, Steve Reicher, filling in for Shane Vanderhart, sitting here with Brian Myers. Thank you and God bless.
Take care, everybody.